music. And these notes are the same notes that our distant primate cousins, the gibbons, sing. Same notes, same octaves. And just by the way, those primates, the gibbons, they descended from our own ancestors about 16.5 million years ago, while our own species is pretty recent, mere 200,000 years ago. And that song, using those notes for their singing, is part of that powerful magic within ourselves and within the birds who sing. We really don't know how it came there. And where did we come from? How did we become who we think we are? One in three Americans insist that humans and other living things have each existed in their present form from the beginning of time. And that belief is based on the Bible's text of Genesis. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. He created light and darkness, day and night, the first day, earth, sea, and heaven the second day, grass and trees on the third day, but he didn't make the sun and moon until the fourth day. On the fifth day, he created creatures of the sea, including great whales and the fowl that fly above the earth. And then the sixth day was the really big one. God made the beasts of the earth and cattle and everything that crept upon the earth. And God saw that it was good. And God said, "Let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that crept upon the earth." So God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him. Male and female created he them. Religious institutions have long had their arguments with science. The Catholic Church convicted Galileo of heresy back in 1633 for his theory that the earth revolved around the sun. Galileo recanted so that he would not be burned at the stake, but he did spend the rest of his life imprisoned. It took the Vatican 360 years to apologize to Galileo. Charles Darwin was luckier. He was a Unitarian, for God's sake. And I really mean that, for God's sake. His seminal work, The Origin of Species, was published on November 22nd, 1859, so just 160 years and 2 days ago. By Darwin's time, at least we educated humans agreed that the earth was round, not flat, that the sun was our source of daylight and the center of our solar system, and that our earth was one of the planets that revolve around that star. On the other hand, how animals and humans came to exist was still a mystery, maybe answered in Genesis. And then Darwin had his 5-year voyage on the Beagle. That voyage on the Beagle took him from Europe all along the coastline of South America and past the southern tips of Australia and of Africa, a very different world from the British Isles and Europe. That was when he saw species after species with all their similarities and differences. cultures and people with different skin color, different hair distribution, so many shapes and sizes, and a world of fossils that told of the extinction of once living creatures never known before. What he learned on his voyage and his astounding years of research thereafter shattered every assumption about where we came from and how we became who we are. Back in Darwin's day, it was well known that animals mated and their offspring resembled their parents. But DNA and genomes were discovered only in 1944. Nevertheless, as Darwin wove together finding after finding of his own and other scientists, he saw as clearly as we do today that our closest living ancestor was the chimpanzee. In his later work, The Descent of Man, he cites fact after fact that no fundamental difference exists between man and the higher mammals, primates, but lots of other mammals too, when it comes to feeling pleasure and pain, happiness and misery. He wrote, "Happiness is never better exhibited by young animals, such as puppies, kittens, lambs, etc., when playing together like our own children. Courage, terror, suspicion, rage, teasing, love between the sexes, and the love of mothers for their infants, grief for the loss of their young. These show up everywhere in so many species. Intellectual qualities, well, these as well. Excitement, attention, curiosity, boredom, imitation, and, of course, memory. These, too, we share with creature after creature. And loveliest of all, Darwin writes, "The imagination is one of the highest prerogatives of man. Dreaming gives us the best notion of this power. The dream is an involuntary act of poetry. As dogs, cats, horses, and probably all higher animals, even birds, have vivid dreams, we must admit that they possess some power of imagination, and maybe poetry too." And reason? He says, "Animals may constantly be seen to pause, deliberate, and resolve," meaning make a decision. So, these are our lower animals. And fossils and species that Darwin and other scientists studied over the years give us a pretty firm picture of evolution of the tree of life, beginning with protozoa and leading to Homo sapiens. Now, we know that we share 99% of our genes with chimpanzees, though our primate ancestors separated from chimpanzees about 4 or 5 million years ago. Our best evidence today is that animal life evolved over the past 800 million years by natural selection, not by the word of God. Why the fight with religion? Well, the things that you're liable to read in the Bible, they ain't necessarily so. The God of Genesis got the timing of everything all wrong. The Big Bang happened about 13.8 billion years ago. It took a lot more than 6 days to make this planet and its creatures. And either man was not made in the image of God, or all creatures are made in the image of God. So the theory of evolution has dethroned both man and God. Conservative Christians are the chief opponents of evolution, and the fight has focused on what children learn in public schools, that is, schools that are supported by the taxes paid by their parents. The most famous fight was the Scopes trial, sometimes called the Scopes monkey trial of 1925. John Scopes was a substitute high school teacher in a small town in Tennessee, where he taught general science and he coached the football team. Scopes never actually taught evolution, but he agreed to be a defendant in that trial as a test case of a Tennessee law because he disagreed with anti-evolution law. Laws like that had been introduced into 37 state legislatures from 1921 through 1929, but there were only four states that had actually passed anti-evolution laws: Tennessee, Mississippi, Arkansas, and Texas. On the team of attorneys, William Jennings Bryan volunteered as the star of the prosecution. Especially galling to Bryan was the use of taxpayer money to support public institutions where a small number of elites taught evolution. As William Jennings Bryan saw it, this doctrine denied the religious beliefs of millions of parents whose tax money was paying these teachers' salaries. Bryan also thought it was absolutely unfair that the theory of evolution was being taught to children who could not also be taught the Bible and religious beliefs in school. Clarence Darrow, perhaps the most famous lawyer in America, volunteered to help defend John Scopes. And he was a very vocal critic of religion and an ardent believer in science. It was hellishly hot in Dayton, Tennessee, when the trial began, July 1925. Toward the close of a second day of the trial, a very contentious day, Darrow insisted it was time for a statement as that day ended. He said, "If today you can take a thing like evolution and make it a crime to teach it in the public school, tomorrow you can make it a crime to teach it in the private schools, and the next year you can make it a crime to teach it in the church. At the next session, you may ban books and newspapers. Soon you may set Catholic against Protestant and Protestant against Protestant and try to foist your own religion up on the minds of men. If you can do one, you can do the other. Ignorance and fanaticism is ever busy and needs feeding. After a while, Your Honor, it's the setting of man against man and creed against creed until we are marching backward to the glorious ages of the 16th century when bigots lighted faggots to burn the men who dared to bring any intelligence and enlightenment and culture to the human mind." So that was Darrow's speech. Well, William Jennings Bryan spoke on day five of the trial, and it was a long, impassioned speech, and he argued that evolution detracted from the dignity and the special status of humans. And his lines were these. Humans are closer to God because they're made in God's image. And evolution simply reduced man to another class of mammal. Tell me that the parents of this day have not any right to declare that their children are not to be taught this doctrine, shall not be taken down from the high plane upon which God has put man, shall be detached from the throne of God to link their ancestors to the jungle. If children believe evolution, they go back to scoff at the religion of their parents. And the parents have the right to say that no teacher paid by their money shall rob their children of faith in God and send them back to their homes, skeptical, infidels, agnostics, or atheists. In answer to William Jennings Bryan, another lawyer for the defense, he had a wonderful name, Dudley Field Malone, gave, oh my, never mind, there is a law of gravity along with all the rest. He gave the finest speech of the trial. He said, there's never a duel with truth. Truth always wins, and we are not afraid of it. The truth is no coward. The truth does not need the law. The truth does not need the forces of government. The truth does not need Mr. Bryan. The truth is imperishable, eternal, and immortal, and needs no human agency to support it. We're ready to tell the truth as we understand it, and we do not fear all the truth that they can present as facts. We're ready. We are ready. We feel we stand with progress. We feel we stand with science. We feel we stand with intelligence. We feel we stand with fundamental freedom in America. We are not afraid. But the judge in the case ruled to exclude any expert witnesses for the defense. So it looked like the battle was over and Genesis had won. But then day six went down in history when the defense called William Jennings Bryan as a witness, not just the lawyer for the prosecution. And Bryan himself demanded his right to testify. And so, of course, Clarence Darrow was the hero who came forward to question him. So here's a little bit of that scene, just not long. So Darrow says, you claim that everything in the Bible should be literally interpreted? Bryan, I believe everything in the Bible should be accepted as it is given there. Darrow, when you read that the whale swallowed Jonah, how do you literally interpret that? Bryan, well, when I read that a big fish swallowed Jonah, it doesn't say whale, a big fish, and I believe it. And I believe in a God who can make a whale and can make a man and can make both what God pleases. Darrow, now, you say the big fish swallowed Jonah and that he remained there how long? 3 days? And he spewed him upon the land. You believe that the big fish was made to swallow Jonah? Bryan, I'm not prepared to say that. The Bible merely says that it was done. And then Darrow spent a while quizzing Bryan about the concept of time in the Bible. Darrow, would you say the earth was only 4,000 years old? Bryan, oh no, I think it's much older than that. Darrow, how much? Bryan, I couldn't say. Darrow, do you think the earth was made in 6 days? Bryan, not 6 days of 24 hours. Darrow, doesn't it say so? Brian, no, sir. I do not think they were 24-hour days. Darrow, well, what do you think about it? Brian, well, that's my opinion. I don't know that my opinion is better on that subject than those who think it does. Well, Darrow says, you don't think that? Brian, no, but I think it would be just as easy for the kind of God we believe in to make the earth in 6 days as in 6 years, or in 6 million years, or in 600 million years. I do not think it's important whether we believe one or the other. Well, that's when the fundamentalists gasped. The Bible says plainly, earth was made in 6 days. And Brian had betrayed his cause. And that's when the judge struck Brian's testimony from the record. And that left the only question, had John Scopes taught that man descended from a lower order of animals? And then Darrow surprised the prosecution. He announced, we have no witnesses to offer, no proof to offer on these issues as to whether he had actually taught it or not. And Darrow moved that the jury be brought in and instructed to find the defendant guilty. The jury deliberated 9 minutes and found Scopes guilty, and the judge fined Scopes $100. 5 days after that trial, William Jennings Bryant died in his sleep. H.L. Mencken, a famous journalist and satirist of the time, declared, God threw a thunderbolt down to kill Clarence Darrow, but missed and hit Brian instead. Ultimately, on appeal, the verdict was struck down on a technicality, and Scopes got a refund of his $100. That Tennessee law was not repealed until 1967. This trial was 1925. Well, as a recovering animal psychologist, as a recovering attorney, and now an ordained minister, I stand with that defense attorney in the Scopes trial, Dudley Field Malone, as we face this era of the most profound assault on truth in every sphere of our lives. He said, the truth is imperishable, eternal, and immortal, and needs no human agency to support it. Can God and truth get along? Yeah, maybe yes. I have a dream about the spirit of love and life. I have a dream about the Big Bang, before time and space had ever been born, when all of this universe was no larger than a peach. I have a dream that some 13.8 billion years ago, some hand of unimaginable dimension once held this seed of this universe. And I have wondered what dreams then dwelt in its core of suns and teeming seas and orchards ripening and falling fruit, and gibbons singing at the dawn, and tigers nursing young, till, overfilled with hope, that seed could hold no more and exploded into 100 trillion stars. Namaste.